Welcome to the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. Show notes can be found at robnunphoto.com. That's robnunphoto.com. SEL is proud to be sponsored by GoToMeeting from Citrix and is a member of the Tech Podcast Network. Find more great podcasts at techpodcasts.com. Now, on with the show. Hello, my friends, and I hope everybody's had a good week out there in photography land. It's the 19th of February 2012. My name's Rob from robnunphoto.com, and this is my little audio diary about my journey through the wonderful world of photography. Well, it's Sunday. I'm actually having my first week off in... Oh gosh, how long have I been working at Machine Mark? Must be about 8 months. So this is the first time I've had more than 2 days off in a row for 8 months. It's not bad, is it? And guess what I did on Thursday morning? Managed to damage my back, didn't I? It wasn't even at work, I wasn't even lifting anything heavy. I was just bending over, cleaning out the toilet of all things, and my back kind of... Well, I didn't really feel it to start off with. Just when I got to work, I thought, ooh, when I got out of the car, I thought, oh, my back's hurting a bit. And it stiffened up throughout the day, right at the bottom of my back. And then on Friday, it was like, oh, and then I came home on Friday night, and I was like, oh, my back really hurts. And Suzanne was like, I don't believe it. You've got so many jobs to do. And I was like, I know, it's terrible. But luckily, my back tends to sort itself out pretty quick. But I made a bad mistake on Friday night, in the fact that I went, right, instead of getting in the driver's side of the car and driving, I'll get in the passenger side to see if that helps. Oh, that didn't help, so I managed to twist my back. And then Saturday morning, while getting out of the shower, I managed to slip and twist my back again. So I was hobbling around all day Saturday. But luckily, done a few things today. Been down the allotment, checked it out. Quite a lot of work to do there, but not too much, not as much as last year. And done a little bit of tidying up in the garden and tried to have a bonfire using the chimney this afternoon, or this evening in the garden as well. So I seem to be all right. I'm okay sitting down, I'm okay standing up, but it's those transitions in between. But hopefully I can have a productive week and get lots of stuff done at home, in the garage, up in the loft, down at the allotment, and maybe take a few photographs too. Okay, so this week's podcast is all going to be about how you can instantly become a better photographer. But before that, as ever, we need to have our little word from our sponsor, which is GoToMeeting. Being able to attach a face to a name is important. It enhances our relationships and the way we do business. But unfortunately, meeting all of your clients and colleagues in person can be impossible. That's why I recommend GoToMeeting with HD Faces. It lets you meet face to face from anywhere in the world. So, how does it work? Well, with GoToMeeting by Citrix, it just takes a webcam and a click to collaborate in group high-definition video. You can see your attendees eye-to-eye while collaborating on documents in real time. You'll feel instantly connected even if you're thousands of miles apart. Plus, GoToMeeting is easy to set up and simple to use. For example, we've used it as a group at techpodcast.com to try it out and just see how good it is. And trust me, it really is fantastic. And not only do you save time by having productive meetings, but you save lots of money in terms of petrol, travel costs, etc. So start hosting your own face-to-face meetings online today with GoToMeeting. And everybody out there can listen to it. All my listeners can try it free for 30 days. Don't wait. Go for this special offer. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST. Be sure to use that promo code PODCAST. Remember, GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST. Thanks to GoToMeeting for sponsoring the SEL Photography Podcast. So, yes, instantly become a better photographer. This is all part of my belief that, you know, if you're into street photography or general walking around and taking pictures of things that catch your eye photography, like I am, you know, we can all be an Henri Cartier-Bresson. In fact, no, let me rephrase that. We all are a Henri Cartier-Bresson. If you're into landscapes, you will be an Ansel Adams. Maybe you're into fashion photography, you will be a Mario Testino, or fill in the name of your favourite fashion photographer. But how can this be? How can we all be the best? And it's quite simple, really. The fact that what you've got to do is only show your very best work. I'll add another thing to that. Only show your very best work, but shoot hundreds of photos. Now, I've talked about this in the past, but I've kind of been thinking about it more and more recently. What you tend to find is, if you watch sort of photography documentaries or films where there's photographers in it, where they give you a realistic description and story of what's going on, you really get an idea of what professional photographers do. Because, I mean, I don't. The only professional photographer I've ever seen in person at work was the ones at our wedding 8 years ago. And they were doing exactly the same thing, which is taking an awful lot of photos. And I've watched a couple of films recently. One was Helmut Newton's Frame from the Edge. And another one, there was a BBC documentary about David Bailey. And there was also a dramatisation of David Bailey's visit to New York with Gene Shrimpton. And in these documentaries and films, the common theme is that the photographers are always taking loads and loads and loads of photographs. To use a sort of a different kind of allegory, to be a really great painter, you know, you train for years and years and years, and then maybe, say something like an oil painter, maybe, you know, you only have the chance over your whole career for a few hundred paintings. And now, if you were a genius, if you're naturally gifted at painting, that might be great, and you might paint quite a few great paintings. But for the ordinary person, only one or two of those paintings will probably be, you know, really good. And the advantage of photographers is that we can take hundreds and hundreds of photos in an hour, let alone a whole career. So even with no formal training and little natural artistic talent, chances are that some of these photos are going to be very good, even if it's only one in a thousand images. So what I'm saying is, everybody can be a great photographer. It doesn't matter what kit you've got. In fact, everybody is a great photographer. It doesn't matter what camera you've got. It doesn't matter what your subject is. As long as you're taking lots and lots of photographs. However, the trick is the editing of those photographs. Because if you take 1,000 photographs of lots of different things or different situations, some of them are going to be really, really good. Even if it's just luck. Okay, and some of the best photographs you'll ever see are normally from people who haven't had any photographic training at all. I've got no idea, no preconceived ideas of what they're doing, and they just snap away and they have dynamic, in-your-face photographs that really speak to the viewer, rather than ones that are sometimes highly contrived. So the trick is to edit those thousands of images and only pick out the ones that you think are better than the others. And this can be really difficult because most photographs can be very, very personal, and you think sometimes the technical aspect of achieving an image, you can be so chuffed by the fact that you've done it that you just want to share it with everybody without sort of considering how good the photograph is in your own terms. I'm not talking about different terms. And a good example for me is when I first started doing HDRs, I was so amazed by this thing, this image that was coming up on my computer screen, that I uploaded almost every single one to Flickr, because I was going, look, these are amazing, look at all the detail and the texture in these photographs. But in fact, really, when I look back on them now, I think, you know, they weren't actually that good. Technically, it was an interesting thing that I was doing to me, because I hadn't seen it before, and maybe to some other people who hadn't seen it before. But now, when we've seen lots of that thing, they're kind of a little bit of a yawn. And so, you know, a big part of this as well is my belief that you don't really know if you've got a great shot by looking at the back of the camera's LCD screen. Or even, you'll hear some photographers talk about the fact that, you know, oh, I pressed the shutter button and I knew I had it. You know, I think you've got to be really, really good to do that. I think the rest of us I've just got to realise that the that little preview screen on the back of the camera makes the photos look sharper and more colourful than they will look like actually when we look at them on your PC. So you have to take more, you have to work the subject so that the chances of a real keeper, a really good one, being there are a lot higher. I mean, and this is the revolution that digital photography has brought over film, because no longer do we have to worry about the cost per shot as we have to do with film. I mean, I can shoot 500 photos in an afternoon's photo walk and not have to take into account all the developing or the film costs. Now, I know that there's the argument that film makes you more careful. It makes you choose your shots before you press the shutter release. I've said this myself a number of times. Watch any documentary of photography from when film was dominant in the professional field, and you'll see that the photographer is shooting away, burning through 120 or 35mm film at a rate that few outside of the professional sphere could afford, you know, even now. I mean, these men and women, like David Bailey, like Avedon, like, again, insert your favourite photographer here, these men and women were at the top of their field, and they had an eye and knew what they were after. Yet they knew that the key to success was to take lots of photos and only show the best. I mean, imagine David Bailey shooting the cover of Vogue. You know, he would take hundreds of photos just to get that one image of the magazine. But, you know, all is not lost for us amateurs who still shoot film. You know, I might not be able to shoot 10 rolls of film in an afternoon, but I can take at least two frames of every scene, usually one landscape or one portrait, and maybe a funky angle before I go on. So you can still practice this with film, or you can kind of come up with the idea that, you know, you'll wait for the decisive moment a la HCB and imagine that what he was doing was just, you know, waiting, click, and that was it, and going on to the next scene. But I forgot the name of the book, but there's a famous book that's been out a while now that has the rolls of film from famous photographs showing you like the before and the after shots. And you can see all these slightly different framings and compositions of the same subject. And then the editor and the photographer came up and said, no, that's the one, that's the magic shot. But it wasn't normally the fact that the photographer knew that at the time. The photographer took a sequence of shots and shows it afterwards. So, back to actually taking the photo. So what I thought I'd do is just talk about how I go through sifting and funneling my photographs to come up with the ones that I think are okay. And maybe this can inspire you if you're kind of struggling a bit with the idea of going out and thinking, well, why aren't my photographs better? Chances are that if you're looking at lots of photo books, lots of published work of good photographs, and you're taking lots of photos, chances are you're just not being hard enough on yourself in terms of self-editing. So you only show your very best. And a kind of rule of thumb for this is if you upload or share more than one of it of the same scene in a very similar photograph in a sequence, really ask yourself, you know, do you need to show those two pictures of the same scene? Or three pictures? Could you just choose the best one? So what do I actually do? So when I go out for a photo walk with my Canon 350D DSLR, I'll probably have the 18-55mm lens on, and I'll have the 55-250 in my back, as I did this afternoon when we went out for a quick photo walk with Suzanne. And I'll probably have the Olympus Chip 35 film camera in my pocket, ready for a film moment. And as we start off, I'll get my camera out and I'll just take some photographs just to get me into the groove. They're probably going to be wide angle shots just to get my trigger finger warmed up and my eye kind of targeted in on what I'm going to be doing. The first shots I tend to take on a photo walk, I know, aren't probably going to be keepers, but they might be used to set the scene if there's a sequence of photos. But what they really do is they get me warmed up. They get me through that uncomfortable first few minutes when you're thinking, oh, well, I've got to start taking a photograph. When do you start? Oh, whoa, is that scene interesting? If you just get your camera out and just take some photographs of anything, doesn't really matter what they are, you'll get through that first barrier and you'll be into your artistic groove. It's like an artistic warm-up, if you like. Then I'll start looking for things that catch my eye. As soon as I see something, maybe I'll shoot a wide shot, and then maybe I'll go telephoto, I'll get closer in, I'll go portrait, I'll go landscape, I'll bend, you know, I'll crouch down to get a different angle. I'll physically move around, looking around me for other shots at the same time. I try and tend to try and leave a little space around my compositions, say in the frame, for cropping afterwards to allow for wonky images, because I'm quite good at not taking straight things. And then I'll move on. And the photo will continue like this. I might glance at my LCD screen every now and again to check I've got the right exposure. I'll probably be in aperture priority mode, so I'll be changing my aperture to varied depth of field and my ISO as the lighting conditions change. And before I know it, I've probably got loads of photographs, even for quite a short photo. Then when I get back home, I'll transfer all the photos to my PC using a card reader. And at the moment, I'm using Google's Picasa 3 because it's free and it's fast. And what I then do is I look at full screen slideshow of the photos, just tapping through them. And any that I think are any good, and this is this kind of start of my editing process, anything that I think is any good, I'll put a star on it. You can do the same similar things in Lightroom and Aperture and Bridge. And I'm not adjusting any of the photos at all, not even straightening them. I'm just looking for potentially good ones. And I'll go through all the photos, normally about 2 to 3 times, starring the ones that I think are okay. And then unstarring other ones. And then what you can do in Picasa is you can then organise your photos in terms of the ones you've starred. It's a bit like doing a favourite. And then I'll look at them again. And I'll unstar any I've changed my mind on. And you'd be surprised at the number of images that you thought were good, that once you've looked at them several times, they kind of lose their lustre a bit. Often I'll go away and have a cup of coffee and then come back and look at them again and think, no, and I'll unstar it. And all of a sudden, you know, you started off with say, 300 photos, and then you're pretty soon, you're down to, like, 10 or 15, and you're like, ooh, wow, you know, and then it might go down to even less. And once I've got this decision down to kind of these ones, I think, yeah, these are okay, these are pretty good, I'll do the post-processing on them. And what I'm doing at the moment, I've got Photoshop loaded up on my laptop, so what you can do in Picasa 3, you can't, I don't think, you can. At the moment I'm not able to, say, open in Photoshop. I think it's because I've got two versions of Photoshop running. Anyway, but what I do is, in Picasa 3, I right-click the photo and select Copy Full Address. Then in Photoshop, you go File, Open, and you paste the full address, and it opens it up. And I do my post-processing in Photoshop, you know, do a black and white conversion, play with levels or curves, etc. And then save them. And then I go back into Picasa, which will have detected that I've saved them, and they'll be in a different folder. And I look at them again, and I add geotags, and I add keywords. And I'll do another full screen slideshow of just those images, just to make sure that I'm happy. And any I'm not happy, I'll get rid of. Then, my kind of final sharing thing is Flickr. You know, that's where I like to look at my photos. That's where I like to share them with all you guys. So what I'll do then is I'll fire up the Flickr uploader, look at the photos again, and just add the photos that I want to share on Flickr. But I'm not finished yet though, because those photos that I upload to Flickr, say there was 300 on a photo walk, I've probably got down to 6 or 7 perhaps for Flickr, and they go up there and they're there for people to look at, and I'll then look at them again maybe the next day or a week later or a few hours later. And the ones that I think are really good, I'll add to a separate set I've got within all my sets called Scale Speeders Slideshow. And I'll put a link to it in my show notes. And this is the images that I think at the time are really good. And I'll put it to there. And I consider that my portfolio of work. It's a bit crazy, isn't it? My portfolio was a Flickr slideshow, but there we go. And even though within that slideshow there's I think at the moment it's about 400 photographs. That's from 4 years on Flickr, you know, and I'm quite, you know, I do take quite a lot of photographs. So from 4 years of being on Flickr, and I upload all the ones that I think are any good, out of all those thousands and thousands and thousands of photographs, there's only 405 in my slideshow. But there's probably only 10 to 20 of them that I think are really good. And so that shows you this big funneling effect that I'm trying to do. And I hope I've kind of pointed towards the path where we can all become better photographers simply by being harsher critics and editors of our own work. Now, you may have noticed that I haven't discussed how you decide which are your best photos, but that's up to you. That's about having personal vision and a personal style, what fits in with what you want to do. And obviously, the next step would be to get a professional editor to look at your shots. That's something I haven't done, and I guess it would probably be quite a harsh initiation indeed. And you know, I'm in for photography because I enjoy doing it, and it's fun, and I don't really want someone ripping my stuff apart, because I want to evolve as a better photographer. But maybe, you know, that's the next thing that I need to do, but I'm kind of not brave enough to do that at the moment anyway. Now, remember, we still got the winter photo assignment, Winter Where I Live, going on over on Flickr. So please put your photographs into the thread over there. Please send me any questions and ideas for the blog and the podcast. Email me scalespeeder@gmail.com. That's scalespeeder at gmail.com. With anything, any requests, any questions, anything you think I should cover. And one thing I'd like to talk about as well is, if you're using Google Plus on a mobile phone or in general, you'll know that as you take photos, they then get automatically uploaded to your Google Plus account. And Google bought Picnic, which is an online photo editing software, last year, and they're starting to integrate all that now. So next time you go into the photos section, your photos on Google Plus, go into the edit bit and have a look at the commands, because it really is quite amazing what you can do in an online service now for free. There's all the simple ones like contrast, clarity, sharpness, autofix, and there's all these great color presets like Holger, black and white, cross process, fake HDR, and the like. It really looks like Google is making the online experience a true rival for the desktop experience. And I guess this kind of makes sense with their Chromebooks, which are low-powered laptops with little memory and just a web browser. But anyway, check it out. I'm sure you'll be impressed. Finally, thanks to Everyday Jones, who do the intro and outro music. You can find their stuff for free download over at everydayjones.com, and you can find them on Facebook too. But most of all, I'd like to thank you for downloading and listening to the podcast. My name's Rob from robnofoto.com, and hopefully pretty soon I'll see you on Flickr.